Hello, I'm Andrew, and welcome to this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News for the 17th of April, 2024.
Hello, and welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by the sight loss charity Beacons. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. Once you've enabled the Talking Newspapers skill, all you need to do is play Talking Newspapers and ask for the Black Country Talking News. Our Talking News service is also available via the free Wireless for the Blind app. It can be found on the Beacon Centre website, www.beaconvision.org/talking-news. As a podcast via services such as Apple or Spotify, or as a free CD, simply contact Beacon Centre on 01902 880 111. We hope you enjoy this week's edition.
Reading for you this week, we have myself, Andrew, Angela, Ian, Christine, Pete, Helen, Mina, Simon, and of course, not forgetting, Flashback Roger. In this week's edition, we have the latest update from Helen, including an update from the electoral services at City of Wolverhampton Council, from an NHS inquisition to the shores of Alcatraz prison. We have the latest news for the Black Country. We have the quiz with Mina. There's a football roundup for West Brom and Wolves. A Did You Know section from Flashback Roger. Are sunnier times about to spring up on us? We hear from Mina, who has all the weather for the week ahead. And we have a special focus on the effects of glare and bright lights and what we can do to make it a little more comfortable. Local news to start there with Ian, Christine, but first, Angela.
Wolverhampton residents said enough is enough as the struggle to book a GP appointment reached new heights, with several city surgeries moving to online booking only. Those registered under Surgeries of the Health and Beyond partnership claim the city's most vulnerable are at risk due to the new total triage system. Health bosses at the group say the new system allows you as the patient to navigate your way to the most appropriate care without the need to phone the practice, and have even hailed the move as reducing our phone waiting time significantly. But patients speaking exclusively to the Express and Star said the city's elderly, those on low incomes and others with disabilities and no internet are missing out on vital care. They claim this is an example of health leaders erecting barriers to see a family doctor face to face, but in turn is adding pressure onto crowded urgent care and A&E departments. In Wolverhampton, the new total triage system has been implemented at the following practices in the Health and Beyond partnership: Bilston Urban Village, Ettingshaw Medical Centre, Parkfield Medical Centre, Woodcross Health Centre, All Saints Surgery and Grove Medical Centre. Under the new system, patients are told to log in online at 8 a.m. to book a same-day appointment. However, once the list has reached capacity, they are faced with a message saying temporarily unavailable and urged to try again the following morning. Bosses of the Health and Beyond partnership said it comes as a modern response to the traditional model of primary care, which is not sustainable to manage the increasing demand. Saar Bassi, Director of Primary Care for the NHS Black Country Integrated Care Board, said, "We are sorry to hear that a number of patients at Health and Beyond partnership are struggling to access appointments. Primary care teams across the Black Country are working harder than ever to ensure patients get the care they need, whilst the demand for GP services continues to increase. The traditional model for primary care is not sustainable to manage the increasing demand, so it is being modernised to make services fit for the future." Many practices, including the Health and Beyond partnership, are beginning this journey by introducing a new total triage system, which allows patients to navigate their way to the most appropriate care online without the need to phone the practice. However, patients will still be able to continue to request an appointment via telephone and walking into the practice. We will continue to work with Health and Beyond to ensure this message is made clear to all patients. It is key that people continue to use GP services if they are feeling unwell or are concerned about any symptoms which are not normal for them.
And the struggles across the Black Country to make an appointment are also compounded with the wait to then attend a GP appointment. As the number of four-week waits for a GP appointment rose by 31% in the Black Country and West Birmingham last year, new research has revealed. Liberal Democrats say they examined NHS data measuring the time between when a GP appointment was booked and when it took place, broken down by local NHS areas across England. Despite the rise, health bosses say more same-day appointments have been offered in the same time period compared to the previous year. Saab Bassi, Director of Primary Care for the NHS Black Country Integrated Care Board, said, "Primary care teams across the Black Country are working harder than ever to ensure patients get the care they need whilst the demand for GP services continues to increase." In 2023, we offered over 225,000 more same-day appointments compared to the previous year, and over 470,000 more appointments overall. All appointments are triaged to ensure patients have a timely appointment with the most appropriate health professional depending on their need. We continue to work with our local GP practices to ensure a range of appointment options are available for patients. In the Black Country, the percentage of appointments over 14 days and 28 days has increased, which is in line with national average. However, the overall number of appointments we've offered has also increased significantly. In 2022, we delivered 330,000 more appointments compared to 2019 pre-pandemic. And in 2023, we delivered 800,000 more appointments than 2019 pre-pandemic. There are some appointments, where appropriate, that are scheduled further in advance, such as screening appointments, health checks, or immunisations. In cases where people's needs are more urgent, appointments are available on the same day.
Now, if you are struggling to make a GP appointment and do have concerns about health and safety or even money matters, then an open day has been organised to help residents voice their concerns. The Help at the Hub event will see a wide variety of city organisations offer free advice and information. The event will take place at Stratton Street Community Centre on 9 Elms Lane in Heathtown on Tuesday, April the 23rd. Between 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. It has been organised by the Council's Public Protection Scams team, who will be handing out free scams awareness and prevention packs. Residents with questions and concerns can meet with Aquarius, Camp Hill Village Trust, Citizens Advice Bureau, Cost of Living Advisors, Council's Customer Services, Council Tax and Housing Benefits Advisors, Health Watch, Public Protection Scams team, The Hope Centre, Waste Services, Wolves Foundation, Wolves at Work and Wolverhampton Homes. Residents are welcome to drop in and speak to any number of the organisations for free help and assistance. John Roseblade, Director of Resident Services at Wolverhampton Council, said, "This will be the 12th in our series of Help at the Hub days, which take support and advice into local communities. People are welcome to pop in and find help with concerns they may have, from work and health to finances and scam awareness. Residents do not have to book an appointment but are asked to please be prepared to wait if the event is busy."
Up next, we hear from Helen, who, as usual, has our latest Beacon update.
Hi everyone, it's Helen from The Beacon, back with your weekly roundup of everything that's been going on at the charity. And this week I am starting with one of my favourite things, some thank yous. And first up, we want to say a huge thank you to everyone who entered the Beacon Centre's Easter raffle. And of course, a huge congratulations goes to our winner, Brie, who picked up the first prize, a giant chocolate egg standing over 1 metre high. We hope that she enjoyed every delicious bite. We certainly would have, I think. Now, thanks to your generosity in entering the raffle, we raised more than £700 for our charity, and those contributions will make a real difference in the lives of those we serve. So thank you so much if you entered. We also want to give a huge shout out to Steve Carey Butchers for their incredible support, raising £60 for Beacon through a rugby sweepstakes. Sounds fun. Their generosity, again, helps make a real difference in helping people to live well with sight loss, and we so appreciate it. Now, are you ready to make a difference while having a blast? Well, take your running to the next level by becoming a fundraising superstar at our Family Fun Colour Run. Set up your own Just Giving page and encourage friends, family and colleagues to sponsor your colourful journey around Wolverhampton's East Park on Sunday, May 12th. Every step you take and every splash of colour you embrace will help support our cause. Anyone who raises more than £50 will get one of our Beacon pin badges and a pair of colourful laces. And if your fundraising tops £150, you'll get both those items plus your own personalised Colour Run t-shirt. Sign up now to get your fundraising started. www.beaconvision.org/colour-run. Next up, I've got a save the date. Yep, mark your calendars for the JW Hunt Cup final happening at no less a venue than Molyneux Stadium on May the 21st. Entrance is £7 or £5 for concessions with tickets available at the gate. The JW Hunt Cup, sponsored by the Gough Group Limited, has been running since 1926 and raises funds for Beacon. We are incredibly grateful for their support. And if you can't wait until the end of May, then you can catch the semi-finals on May the 2nd and the 8th at AFC Wolfunions. The lineup so far includes Lichfield City, Wolverhampton Casuals FC, and Stonehold Alleyans. It's bound to be an epic journey to the final, so we would love for you to join us. Now, last this week, if you've been celebrating Eid, we hope it has been filled with love, peace and happiness. And on that note, I'll bow out for this week and I will see you all again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for that update, Helen. Next up, we have another block of local news. And up first, we hear from Christine.
The owners of what was once known as Britain's Wonkiest Inn have put forward a plan to rebuild it in a new location after it was demolished following a suspected arson attack. ATE Farms Limited have been ordered to rebuild the Crooked House pub in Himley near Dudley after it was knocked down following a fire in August 2023. But in appeal documents, it said the current location was not viable for a pub and rebuilding on land it owns in the nearby area would increase its chance of success as a community asset. South Staffordshire Council's enforcement notice states the pub must be built back to what it was prior to the fire. An appeal against the order is set to be heard in July. The Crooked House was first built in 1765 as a farmhouse, but due to mining in the area during the early 19th century, one side of the building began to gradually sink. It became a Black Country icon that attracted attention from all over the world. The pub caught fire on the 5th of August in a suspected arson attack and was demolished 2 days later. Staffordshire Police said 5 men and 1 woman were arrested and bailed in connection with the fire. ATE Farms Limited said Rebuilding in the current location, in line with the enforcement notice, would still not provide a sustainable community facility, as the building was not this prior to its sale by the Marston's Brewery. The owners said people had not been using the building for it to be viable as a pub, and its location and lack of footfall were key to this. Instead, the owners said they had put forward a genuine and practical solution to rebuild the Crooked House on other land it owned further north of Crooked House Lane. In its current location, should it be rebuilt, there is no doubt that there would be a huge amount of interest in the first few months. However, this does not translate to continued and sustained interest to make the building work as a pub going forward, they said. The rebuilt building would be run as a pub with other development to increase footfall and to give it a real chance of success as a community asset. The owners also said they were not in any way responsible for the fire which broke out on 5th of August and destroyed a substantial part of the pub structure. They said at a site meeting the council agreed with its contractors certain parts of the remaining structure should be demolished on safety grounds. However, the owners said it had not been foreseen this removal would make the rest of the building completely unsafe. They also said, notwithstanding the opinion that it should have been, the building was not listed. However, it recognised the extraordinary level of public feeling towards the Crooked House.
Staying in Himley. And work is set to get underway on a new children's play area at Himley Hall and Park. The space will feature a large play tower including a spiral slide, rotating carousels, a zip line, seesaws, rocking horses and swings. It will be located in the woodland of the 180-acre Dudley Park, transforming an area near to the former tennis court and pavilion into a spot for youngsters to enjoy. In keeping with its natural surroundings, the play area will be constructed using mostly timber with a mix of grassland, a loose mulch surface, and feature a natural wood chip path to separate equipment. The works, which will begin on April the 29th, come following a successful public consultation by Dudley Council in 2021 and planning permission from South Staffordshire Council, whose boundaries cover the park. Helen Martin, Director of Regeneration and Enterprise at Dudley Council, said, "Our consultation showed there was a clear demand among residents for a play area at Himley Hall and Park. We have listened carefully to their responses and taken action to create a space where children can enjoy themselves to the full without disrupting the tranquility of the rest of the park. The play area will attract more families to the park, boosting trade for the food and drinks vendors that we have on site. This will help to maintain Himley as one of the most popular places in the borough for visitors to explore the great outdoors. We have taken a lot of care to make sure the design of the play area is sensitive to where it is going to be located, and the concept images look fantastic. Contractors Iber Play Limited will begin the installation of the play area later this month in the hope of it being ready for use in mid-July. Himley Hall and Park will remain open as normal throughout the works, with visitors welcome between 7:30 a.m. and dusk. The site's coffee lounge is open daily between 9:30 a.m. and 4 p.m. Dudley Council has, however, advised people to take extra care at the site while heavy machinery and delivery vehicles are there, particularly during the first week of the works when play equipment will be delivered.
The ability to laugh, play and have fun not only makes life more enjoyable, but also helps you solve problems, connect with others and think more creatively. Everyone likes a good belly laugh from time to time, and science supports that feeling. Studies have shown that laughing is even linked to our physical, emotional and mental well-being, even our relationships. So how would you like to take your giggling to another level? Well, a free yoga class in Stourbridge on World Laughter Day is aiming to help you to do just that. Every year, all around the world, on the first Sunday in May, World Laughter Day is marked. World Laughter Day is an annual event celebrated worldwide to raise awareness about laughter and its many healing benefits, as well as about thousands of community groups around the world who regularly practice comedy that promote wellness and overall well-being. This year it will be marked on Sunday, May the 5th, and people will have the chance to take part in a laughter yoga session which combines laughter exercises with deep breathing. It is described as an aerobic exercise and leaves participants feeling energized, uplifted, and connected to each other. The one-hour class will be held from 11 a.m. at the Hub Building, Mary Stevens Park, Stourbridge. Visit marymaggie.co.uk/world-laughter-day-2020 to find out more. Or you can contact Maggie by emailing maggie@marymaggie.co.uk or calling 07565 219 567 for more details. Now it's time to test your knowledge, as we have the quiz questions for this edition brought to us by Mina.
Hello and welcome to this week's flashback quiz. All the answers you need can be found later in Flashback Rogers Did You Know feature. But for now, these are your questions. Here we go. Question 1. How big was the first VCR in 1956? Question 2. What did Nintendo sell before computers? Question 3. What was the Flavin Amphitheatre later called? Question 4. What did the Mayans in Central America use for currency? Question 5. How many potatoes would you have had to shell out for a wife? And finally, question 6. What's the name of the lady who first presented chocolate chip cookies? I will be back with you later in the show to give you all your answers, but for now, best of luck!
Cheers for those questions, Mina. I'll get my mind working on them. Up now, however, is another block of local news.
An online petition of nearly 11,000 signatures has prompted the government to launch a study into the issue of headlight glare. The petition, set up by a member of the public but campaigned for by the RAC, reflects a recent study by the breakdown assistance provider, which found as many as 8 in 10 drivers believe that the problem of headlight glare is getting worse. A problem not only experienced by drivers but passengers too. A recent survey of 2,000 drivers found that 89% think headlights on modern cars are too bright, and some 91% say they get dazzled, and 74% say that it happens regularly. Rod Dennis, RAC road safety spokesman, said, "The fact that the government has listened to drivers' concerns and heeded our calls to examine the complex issue of headlight glare in more detail marks a real turning point. Brighter headlights, while giving drivers a better view of the road ahead, are clearly causing other road users significant problems. As many as 9 in 10 drivers tell us they believe at least some car headlights are too bright, while 14% of drivers aged 65 plus say they have stopped driving altogether as a result of being dazzled. Petition will need to receive at least 100,000 signatures for the issue to be discussed in Parliament." Baroness Hayter said this is a victory for all those drivers affected by glare who've complained to their MP, signed the parliamentary petition, or indeed sought help from an optometrist or an optician, only to discover the problem was with headlights and not their eyes. "This is an issue the RAC has long campaigned on, and I am delighted the government has recognised there is a real problem. We look forward to discussing its research in due course." So, what actually is glare, and is there anything we can do to help make things more comfortable? Let's head over to Angela and Christine, who can share a little bit more with us.
Thanks, Ian. Light sensitivity, also known as photophobia, often affects people who have an underlying eye condition, such as macular degeneration, cataract, glaucoma, and/or retinitis pigmentosa, to name but a few. Good lighting can help you make the most of your sight, particularly if you have an eye condition that is affecting your vision. However, for some people, everyday lighting conditions can seem too bright, causing them discomfort, and this can even affect their quality of vision. Light sensitivity can increase when you have an eye condition, but it can also be caused by some general health conditions. For some people with light sensitivity, there can be no known medical cause. Whatever the underlying cause, reducing the amount of light entering the eye can still help to relieve the symptoms of light sensitivity. What causes light sensitivity? Light sensitivity is often worse when you have an eye condition. This might be because there is inflammation, swelling, affecting part of your eye. There are some eye conditions that cause your eye to adapt more slowly to changing light levels, and this can make you more light sensitive in these situations. Your eye condition may cause changes that mean light is scattered inside your eye instead of reaching the macula as it should. This light scatter causes glare, which can increase your sensitivity to light. Other causes of light sensitivity include some medications, migraine, and some general health conditions. Some people are more light sensitive without having an underlying medical cause. So, what actually is glare? Sometimes the lighting around us interferes with our vision. When lighting makes it uncomfortable for you to see or makes your vision worse, it's known as glare. Glare can be a problem if a light is too bright for you, it's coming from the wrong source, or it isn't in the right place. There are actually 2 different types of glare. Here's Angela, who can tell us a little bit more.
Thanks, Christine. That's correct. There are 2 types of glare, both of which can cause problems. Discomfort glare and disability glare. For some people, both can be present at the same time in certain circumstances. What is discomfort glare? Discomfort glare occurs when a light source is just too strong for our eyes. It may cause us to screw up, shade, or even close our eyes because the light level makes you feel uncomfortable. When trying to see in these bright conditions, however, discomfort glare doesn't usually make your vision less clear than it was before. What is disability glare? Disability glare occurs when a light source reduces how well we can see, and the brighter the light is, the more glare it can cause. Some eye conditions cause disability glare, not only in bright lighting, but with everyday lighting as well. Disability glare doesn't necessarily cause discomfort, but it can reduce how much detail we can see. This type of glare generally reduces contrast so that objects aren't as easy to see against their background. If you suddenly become sensitive to light or your light sensitivity worsens, it is always best to have any new symptoms checked by a doctor or optometrist, optician, as soon as possible. They will be able to check the health of your eyes and look for anything which could be causing your light sensitivity or issues with glare. Now, with information on how to limit the amount of light entering your eyes and further help on how to manage light sensitivity and glare, here's Pete with some more useful tips.
If you need help with sight loss, then filter glasses might help you. Filter glasses are a range of glasses specially for sight loss, designed to protect your eyes from harmful UV rays and reduce glare and bright light, and also improve contrast as well. They make things clearer to see and your eyes more comfortable. They can either be worn on their own, or you can wear them over your existing prescription glasses. Wearing a sun hat or a baseball cap or a sun visor can also help too. So if you'd like to try the range of Cocoon filter glasses and find the right lens and frame to make life a bit more comfortable for you, then call Beacon Sight Loss Advisors for an appointment. You can call on 01902 880 111 and ask for a sight loss advisor.
Up next, let's have another block of local news.
A best-selling author who lifted the lid on the struggles of hundreds of postmasters falsely accused by the Post Office of fraud is appearing in Dudley this week. Nick Wallace was a series consultant on the critically acclaimed ITV drama Mr. Bates vs. the Post Office. Now the author of The Great Post Office Scandal is bringing the story behind the book to the stage at Dudley Town Hall on Friday, April the 19th, starting at 7:30. Award-winning journalist Wallace will tell the tale of the fight by hundreds of innocent people to clear their names after being told they owed thousands by the post office. In reality, it was down to a glitch with a new computer system. In the second half of the show, there will also be a question and answer session, where Wallace will be joined by Wendy Buffery, a former sub-postmaster directly affected by the scandal. Rupert Nolden, venues manager for Dudley Borough Halls, said, "This is the story of what is widely considered to be the biggest miscarriage of justice in British legal history. It really came to the fore after millions watched the ITV drama, and the makers of that hit programme openly acknowledge they couldn't have done it without the input of Nick Wallace. He is the leading expert on this story, and if you have any interest in it, we'd urge you to grab one of the last few tickets and come and hear what he has to say. To book tickets, call the box office on 01384 812812 or book online at boroughhalls.co.uk.
Now, if I said a local resident was going to take on a swimming challenge at The Rock, you'd be forgiven for thinking it was set to be a few lengths of Tetnall Pool. Quite remarkably, a determined father from the Black Country is all set to take on the notorious swim from the prison on Alcatraz Island, also known as The Rock, for the charity that helped his autistic son. 61-year-old Glyn Marston will be heading to the sunny Californian shores to take part in an exciting open water challenge later this year, swimming from Alcatraz Prison to San Francisco Bay, around 1.5 miles. The asbestos consultant, who used to be an ultra-distance runner but has taken to open water swimming for the past 2 years, says he is excited to partake in such an iconic route. "Three prisoners escaped from Alcatraz and allegedly swam to shore," Glyn said. "It's an iconic story. After taking up open water swimming, I have been looking to take on some iconic challenges in the water, and this is one of them." Glyn said he particularly wanted to take part in a swimming challenge at Alcatraz after looking into it for 12 months. "It has appealed to me for a year now, and I feel like I am at that fitness level where I can take this challenge on," he said. Glyn has a daughter called Louise, 37, and a son called Liam, 31. After Liam was diagnosed with autism, Glyn said he received unmatched support from MenCap, a charity that helps people with learning difficulties. "The father of two chose to raise money for them because he believes in their work. My son has attended a few events staged by MenCap, and they are instrumental in helping people with mental health issues lead a normal life," Glyn said. They do great work with people, even people who are having a mental breakdown. They support them. Their support is really important, and I believe in the work that they do. Glenn's wife, Angie, will be there with him to support him. She is amazed at my fitness level and strength of mind. I am a determined person, Glenn said. He says he feels more excited than nervous, but there will be obstacles. I'm very excited to swim the distance, but there are strong currents to swim across. Current doesn't follow you en route. You have to swim against it, and it could pull you off course. There will be a strong support team there on paddleboards and boats to make sure you stay on course. There have been reports of sharks in that area in the past, not far from San Francisco Bay, so that's a bit nervy. It is safe to swim there though, otherwise they wouldn't stage it. Glenn is currently waiting to hear back from the organisers as to whether he is taking part in September or early next year. Anyone wishing to support his journey can do so at www.justgiving.com/fundraising/Glenn Marvel Marston.
A 65-year-old woman from Kidderminster has issued a desperate plea for help after her childhood toys were accidentally taken to charity shops in Briley Hill. Diane Hall, who is originally from Quarry Bank, had been storing her treasured dolls at her sister's house following the death of their mum 7 years ago. Sadly, Ms. Hall's sister suddenly passed away a few weeks ago, and when the family were sorting through her home, the toys ended up being taken to a charity shop. Ms. Hall said, "Our mum died a few years ago, and when we were clearing out her home, I had a big estate car, so I took all the broken down furniture, and my sister took the bags and boxes as she had a smaller car. My dolls and a bear were in a suitcase that ended up being stored at my sister's house. I never thought anything of it, and when my sister suddenly passed away a few weeks ago, it was the last thing on my mind. It wasn't until after the funeral that I asked the family about the toys and if I could have them back. They were heartbroken when they realised what had happened. It is in no way their fault, as they didn't know, but I'm absolutely devastated." The family said the dolls, which had been given to Ms. Hall as a gift more than 60 years ago, had been taken to charity shops in the Moore Centre. Ms. Hall contacted the shops, but the staff were unable to locate the dolls or remember seeing them. She said, "They were all very helpful, but understandably they couldn't recall seeing the dolls as they have a lot of different staff. I was told they could have been sold or ended up at a distribution centre in Kidderminster or elsewhere in the country. The dolls mean so much to me and have been in my family for years, but they might have attracted a collector. They were given to me as a gift from my father and grandfather, and I have such fond memories of them. One was even bought from Germany. This is my desperate plea from the heart for anyone who might have them to come forward and help reunite me with my childhood treasures. Charity shops do incredible work, but the dolls are priceless to me." Ms. Hall has urged anyone with information about the dolls to contact her and has promised to refund any money paid for them. She's also willing to exchange the dolls for a suitable replacement. She added, "My mum's house was like a treasure trove, and the dolls are part of my lifelong memories of her. She even dressed them in the exact clothes they were wearing, which belonged to me as a child. I still have the photographs to remember them, but it would mean the world to get them back."
Up next, it's trivia time, brought to us by Flashback Roger and his Did You Know feature. Take it away, Roger.
Hello again, everyone. Well, what stormy days we've had lately, eh? I do hope that you've not been washed out by it all. Any road up, here goes with yet another dose of amazing items for you to dazzle your friends with. So, did you know that? Well, we've all heard about Sony and the like, but Nintendo was founded in 1889. It's been around long before computers. So what did they sell? Well, from 1889 to 1956, Nintendo was a playing card company. They still manufacture playing cards in Japan, and even have a bridge tournament named after them called the Nintendo Cup. When the first VCR, or video camera recorder, was made in 1956, it was the size of a piano, way bigger than I would have guessed. It used 1-inch bright tape and cost $50,000, so it was only affordable to big companies, TV corporations and government. The first affordable TV recorder for domestic use appeared in 1975 by JVC and then by Sony in 1977. The machines cost the equivalent of £3,000 in today's money, and the blank tapes cost around 20 quid. The famous Colosseum in Rome was originally known as the Flavian Amphitheatre, as it was constructed during the Flavian Dynasty. Residents of Rome nicknamed it the Colosseo, because it was built next to the 164-foot statue of Emperor Nero as the Colossus of Nero. And cocoa beans were a favoured form of currency in Central America, first used by the Mayan people as a barter material in exchange for things such as food and clothing. Then in the 1500s, when Spain colonised most of Central America, the cocoa bean was introduced to the world and exported globally. Due to the low yield of the cocoa plant, the beans became a rare commodity and commanded a high price tag. While I'm telling you about weird currencies, definitely one of the strangest ones in the list by a long shot is that of the Bafia potato mashers. They were used in an ancient form of currency in trading in Bafia in Africa. Now then, Bafia, as I'm sure we all know, is a province of Cameroon and is the home of the Bantu people, where in ancient culture, a wife could be purchased for the price of 30 potatoes. Now then, who knows where the original recipe for chocolate chip cookies came from? Well, actually nobody does. One suggestion is that Ruth Wakefield, the creator of chocolate chip cookies, ran out of nuts for ice cream cookies and used chocolate instead. Others suggest that chocolate chunks accidentally fell into the mixer. But the true story has never been confirmed, and if Ruth did know, then she never said. Oh blimey, I just realised that this week's offering was a bit foody, wasn't it? Cocoa spuds and then biscuits. But then I can't think of a nicer subject to end on. So I'll clear off and make me a nice cup of tea and relax with my Kit Kat. Till next week then, I'll just say bye for now. Ta-ra a bit. Ta-ra.
Up now we have to hear what the weather has in store for us. Brought to us, come rain or shine, by our own Sunny Mina.
Whisper it quietly, but the weather for the week ahead is forecast to remain dry. With a warm front driving in from the west, we should hopefully see more spells of sunshine and milder temperatures as we progress through this week. In result, UV levels will remain at medium. The sunrise and sunset times are 5:50 a.m. for the sunrise and 20:25 for the sunset. Friday, 19th of April, is forecast to have an overcast start to the day, with a chance of sunny intervals breaking through in the afternoon. With a moderate westerly breeze, temperatures are forecast to be more like it for this time of year at around 14 degrees. Moving on, and the spell of sunshine looks set to continue into the weekend, with both Saturday and Sunday remaining dry and bright. With a gentle breeze continuing to come in from the west, temperatures will also feel very much like spring at 15 and even 16 degrees in parts of the region. On to next week, and the weather is forecast to remain settled with long dry spells of weather. A gentle breeze and sunny spells are set to remain in the region on Monday 22nd of April and continue right through to Thursday 25th of April. Temperatures should still be very much like spring at 15 degrees. So, there we have it. It sure does look like we may have to reach out for sun hats and sunglasses this week. As always, do take care and enjoy the weather.
Cheers for that weather update, Mina. Now it's time to find out how our local football teams have been getting on.
After a 2-2 draw at the City Ground, it may end up becoming a season of what if for Wolves. Although they have had one or two injuries consistently throughout the season, Wolves' fitness record has been solid all season until their luck ran out. Now winless in the last 5 games in all competitions, this blip has seen Wolves miss out on an FA Cup semi-final and a realistic chance of getting into Europe. The latter ambition is not mathematically over, but without a win over Nottingham Forest, it is now incredibly unlikely that they will make it. With a squad that was already paper thin, the several attacking injuries suffered at the same time saw Wolves run out of steam at the vital moment, and the performances of their returning stars on Saturday proved how differently the season could have panned out. Considering where Wolves found themselves last summer, it has still been a remarkably successful campaign, but the frustration lingers at what could have been. In his 2 substitute appearances after returning from injury, Mateus Cunha did not make a big impact as he got back into his rhythm. But in his first start since coming back, the Brazilian international took centre stage at the City Ground. In a scrappy and fairly quiet first half, Cunha injected a moment of pure quality. Quick thinking from Jose Sá to release him saw Cunha run into the left channel, surrounded by 3 Nottingham Forest defenders. Yet the Brazilian international still somehow found the skill to cut inside, dance his way through the challenges, and curl home a beauty into the top corner from just inside the penalty area. It was a truly magnificent solo goal from a player having a truly tremendous season. The inevitable then occurred when Morgan Gibbs-White scored against his former club, with some lackluster defending allowing him to glance a header home. The celebration and scenes in front of the away end were pantomime but expected. The second half then saw more poor defending hand Forest the lead, and the onus was on Wolves to get back into it, which they did within 5 minutes. This time, a poacher's finish from Cunha rounded off an excellent afternoon from the forward. Wolves rode their luck while Sarr produced some good saves, as they saw out the result for a point with a makeshift 11 that had Boubacar Traoré filling in at right wing-back. Gary O'Neill's side have never been lacking in character this season, and they showed it in abundance again to secure a point against a side scrapping for their lives. But had Wolves had certain players available in recent weeks, it may have been a different end to the season. The difference Cunha made to Saturday's game was evident, and the same can be said for Hwang Hee-chan, who came off the bench for his first minutes since picking up a hamstring injury of his own on February the 28th. He may not have scored or assisted, but he offered Wolves a focal point, made intelligent runs, held the ball up, and created space for others. Wolves have missed this attacking pair and plenty others at a crucial point of the season. Football can be cruel, but it can give you some pretty harsh lessons to learn too, as Brandon Thomas Asante will have learned in Albion's 1-0 defeat to Sunderland. The first red card of Carlos Corberan's Albion reign proved costly as Sunderland's Pierre Ekwa scored a winner at the Hawthorns to end the Baggies' 10-game unbeaten run. Brandon Thomas Asante's dismissal for 2 yellow cards in as many minutes before the break was followed almost immediately by Frenchman Ekwa's winner from a corner in first half stoppage time. A rare Baggies red card, just the second since the start of last season, ended an impressive streak without defeat and meant the wait to mathematically secure a playoff place goes on for 5th-placed Albion. An emotionally charged afternoon at the Hawthorns brought an atmosphere to boot as the home faithful responded to a bright start from their side, with Sunderland defender Dan Ballard the recipient of loud jeers every time he touched the ball, following his challenge which injured Josh Meyer at the Stadium of Light in December, which Corberan described after Saturday's game as terrible. But Thomas Asante's marching orders were justified for two poor tackles. They were ill-timed on what had been an afternoon of struggle for the striker, but one where Albion caught the eye for 30 or 35 minutes. The dismissal did not excuse woeful marking for Ekwah to strike from a dead ball. Albion were unable to rally and hit back after the break without a presence leading the line. They were limited to a couple of efforts from range as Sunderland managed the game admirably and remained a threat on the break, going closest to adding another goal. Albion also lost Nathaniel Chaloba and Kyle Bartley to potential injuries. The buffer to playoff chasing rivals was cut, but Albion still hold a 7-point advantage with 3 games left, albeit with games in hand elsewhere. Disappointed boss Carlos Corberan felt Albion were delivered a lesson in remaining calm in the heat of battle, and the Albion boss stressed all of his players, and not just Thomas Asante, must be able to control excitement amid a high desire to secure the required points to secure their playoff position. The second yellow card had a massive impact, Corberan admitted. You can have desire, but when you have a yellow card, you need to remain calm. We then conceded from the situation, which we must avoid. We knew we would have to take risks with a player less, and you know with those risks you can concede, but to concede from a set piece after losing a player, it is painful. The bigger picture shows there's still work to be done ahead on the road, at either Leicester or Sheffield Wednesday, before the final day at home against Preston.
Coming up next on this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News, we have another feature from the Electoral Services at Wolverhampton Council, detailing the changes and support that will be available at polling stations for the forthcoming elections in May.
Hello, I'm Amelia Higgs, Electoral Services Apprentice at the City of Wolverhampton Council.
And I'm Chris Lightwood, Electoral Services Administrator.
We are going to tell you about the elections taking place in May and the support available in polling stations to people affected by sight loss. We will also cover the key deadlines to make sure that you are registered to vote and deadlines for applying for postal and proxy votes. On Thursday the 2nd of May 2024, there will be local elections taking place in Wolverhampton, where all 20 councillor seats are up for election. There will also be an election for Mayor of the West Midlands Combined Authority.
To vote in the polling station, you must bring an acceptable form of ID, such as a passport or driving licence. If you do not have an acceptable form of ID, you can apply for a free voter ID document, known as a voter authority certificate. If you need assistance applying for a voter authority certificate, there are daily drop-in sessions taking place at Wolverhampton Civic Centre between 10 a.m. and 3 p.m. on weekdays, and also a drop-in session available at every library and some leisure centres across the city. A full list of acceptable ID and information about how to apply for free ID at one of our drop-in sessions can be found on our website at wolverhampton.gov.uk/elections.
If you choose to vote in person at the polling station, there is a range of support available to you. All of the key signage in the polling station will now be printed on the yellow background with black text to make it more accessible. The slot on the ballot paper will have white stickers around it to make it more visible. You can request additional lighting from the polling station staff. If you have difficulty completing the standard print ballot paper, you can request the use of a tactical voting device to help mark your vote in the correct place. The tactile voting device has a sticky backing which attaches on top of your ballot paper. It has numbered lift-up flaps, numbers are raised and are in braille, directly over the boxes where you can mark your vote. You can use large print ballot form in the polling station as a guide to follow, or ask someone, a companion of polling station staff, to read out the list of candidates to you. The candidates are in alphabetical order. You will need to remember the number of candidate you wish to vote for, then lift the flap with the same number and mark your cross in the box. You can then detach the tactile device and fold your ballot paper in half before posting in the ballot box. The use of mobile phones to aid someone with disabilities allowed in polling stations, and seeing AI apps or video magnifying glasses will alter the rules in polling stations as a reasonable adjustment in the Equality Act. Please inform the presiding officer in your polling station if you wish to use these before you go into the polling booth. If you would prefer to bring a companion with you to assist in voting as opposed to receiving assistance from a member of staff at the polling station, this is possible. Your companion must be either a close relative, aged 18 or over, or a qualified elector. The voter should ask for the permission of the presiding officer to be assisted by their companion. The companion, not a voter, is required by law to complete a simple declaration. Declaration is made by a companion of the voter with disabilities. The companion should fill out the declaration and sign the document. If requested, polling station staff can also assist you with marking your ballot paper.
I'm now going to cover some key dates for your information. Firstly, if you are not already registered to vote, the easiest way to vote is online on the government website at www.gov.uk/register-2-vote. Or if you live in the Wolverhampton area, you can call our office and register over the phone on 01902 551177. There are a number of ways to have your say. You can vote in a polling station, by post, or by appointing someone you trust to vote on your behalf, known as a proxy vote. The deadline to apply to vote by post is 5 p.m. on Wednesday the 17th of April. The deadline to vote by proxy is 5 p.m. on Wednesday the 24th of April. The deadline to apply for a free voter authority certificate is also 5 p.m. on Wednesday the 24th of April. The easiest way to apply for a postal vote or proxy vote is online at www.gov.uk/apply-postal-vote or www.gov.uk/apply-proxy-vote. Alternatively, you can contact us to request a form to be posted or emailed out to you by calling 01902 551177 or by email at electoral.services@wolverhampton.gov.uk. If you are unable to make your signature on the postal vote application form due to a disability, then please contact us on 01902 551177 to request a signature waiver. You can find out more about all of this on our website at www.wolverhampton.gov.uk/elections.
Now, here come the quiz
answers,
and they're brought to us by Mina.
Hello, and here are your answers for this week's flashback quiz. Feeling confident? How will you score? Let's see. Question 1. How big was the first VCR in 1956? And the answer? As big as a piano. Question 2. What did Nintendo sell before computers? And the answer here is playing cards. Question 3. What was the Flavin Amphitheatre later called? And the answer here is the Colosseum. Question 4. What did the Mayans in Central America use for currency? And the answer here is cocoa beans. Question 5. How many potatoes would you have to shell out for a wife? And the answer, 30. And finally, question 6. What's the name of the lady who first presented chocolate chip cookies? It is believed to be Ruth Wakefield. Did you get them all right? If not, not to worry, as I will be back next week to test you all once again. Bye for now.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sight loss tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 88011. Email bctn@beaconvision.org or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who, without their support, we would be unable to run this free service. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us. Stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!